Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's webinar on the subject of RIOS 2016, where we'll be providing an overview of the RIOS standard. My name is Austin Matthews. I'm the EHS Program Manager with Perry Johnson Registrars. So again, welcome. I have an agenda on this slide. What we will be covering this afternoon, we will begin our presentation with an overview of Perry Johnson Registrars, who we are, what we do. We'll cover some of the benefits and drivers of certification to a standard such as RIOS. Then we will delve into some of the key requirements and a general standard overview. Get into a little bit more detail as we work our way through the clauses of the standard itself. And then we will close with an overview of the certification process for anyone who is pursuing initial certification, so you can get familiar with what that process entails. And we will close with questions as well. So feel free to type those questions that you might have into the chat at any point throughout the presentation, but I will be saving those questions for the end. PJR is one of the leading registrars in the world. And while this list is not necessarily all-inclusive, it certainly gives you an idea of our global presence as a certification body. We have certified clients to a variety of standards, really around the globe. Speaking of a wide variety of standards, PJR is accredited to grant certification for all of the standards shown on the site, and again, this may not be an all-inclusive list, but certainly gives you an idea of the breadth of standards that, as a registrar, we are accredited to. Today, obviously, we are talking about the RIOS standard. Benefits of certification vary by standard, by industry, by client, by location, but for RIOS and similar standards, a number of the benefits are similar. A standard such as RIOS can improve the organization's quality, environmental, health, and safety performance and minimize QEHS risks, since RIOS is a standard which encompasses quality, environmental, and health and safety criteria within it. There isn't a need to add together a quality standard, an environmental standard, and a health and safety standard. RIOS encompasses all three, or all four. And an acronym you'll commonly see is QEHS. So driving improvements to quality, environmental, health, and safety performance, minimizing those QEHS risks, that's one of the main benefits of certification to a standard like RIOS. Maintaining the RIOS controls or requirements can drive improvements in material sourcing and outsourcing controls, can also drive improvement in areas such as management commitment and employee engagement, can provide a competitive advantage over competitors or other organizations who do not hold the RIOS certification or similar certifications. Being able to advertise a certification like RIOS and what it represents can also drive improved public image, in addition to representing the possibility of competitive advantage or improving public image. There could be other financial benefits, again, depending on the location in the industry. Sometimes, for example, health and safety certifications can result in lower insurance premiums. The standard represents a framework for meeting customer and/or regulatory requirements. So in implementing and maintaining the requirements of RIOS, you are identifying and implementing controls to maintain compliance with those relevant requirements. The standard itself represents a commitment to responsibly managing recyclable materials. So again, being able to advertise that certification and what it represents can convey that same commitment and drive improvement in public image. The RIO standard can be integrated with other standards. One example is the R2v3 standard. So some of those may be, some of you may be R2 facilities or pursuing R2v3 certification. So the RIO standard is one of the standards that meets the prerequisite requirements for R2v3. When we look at RIO's 2016 at a high level, there are some themes that jump out. So some of the main requirements in RIO's 2016, especially when we compare it to its predecessor, RIO's 2006, there is a greater emphasis on leadership. There is also emphasis on proactivity and risk management concepts. There is a greater level of emphasis on the outcomes of the management system itself. Communication and awareness requirements are incredibly important, and this would include stakeholder requirements, customer requirements, and a number of other requirement sources. Change management is also a very important concept and echoes the focus on proactivity. And we'll talk about some of these concepts in greater detail. Some general information about RIOS that I'd like to share before we get into any greater detail. To obtain a copy of the RIOS standard, you do need to contact RIOS directly. RIOS has some RIOS-specific requirements that can be found in the RIOS certification program, and some of those are called out here as well. There are requirements that are relevant to the certification bodies, such as PGR. However, since they trickle down to our clients or affect the way the audits are fulfilled, I have included them in these slides. One example is the RIOS certification program requires that all NCRs issued during a recertification audit be fully closed before they can be accepted and a certificate issued. So for RIOS, even minor NCRs issued at a recertification audit need to be closed with implementation of both correction and corrective action, rather than having the time between the recertification audit and the first surveillance to implement the corrective action tasks identified. So those have to be completed in the short term with evidence of implementation provided to the auditor. The auditor is also required to be replaced each recertification audit. So we need a new auditor every recertification audit to ensure there's a fresh set of eyes on the management system to help drive continual improvement and a number of other factors. RIOS also requires an annual membership be maintained. So those RIOS membership fees would be paid directly to RIOS, not to PJR, in order to continue to be eligible for RIOS certification. And the certification program also specifies certain standard requirements that can't be sampled across the surveillances, but need to be sampled during every audit. Some examples include competency and training processes, communication processes, monitoring and measurement, and the operational processes against which NCRs were issued in the previous two years of audits. So whereas we would sample those same processes again the following year for some of the other standards we audit to, RIOS requires that that process be sampled for the subsequent 2 years to really ensure effective corrective actions are identified or that the root cause was effectively identified to have a larger sample size. Sometimes we see NCRs written against issues that may not crop up over the course of 1 year. So by increasing the oversight to 2 years, we have a better sample, more likely to encounter that issue again, if not once, perhaps multiple times, and really get a sense of how effective the response was, in regards to that particular finding. So as we go through the standard, we're not necessarily going to touch on every single clause, but we are going to cover the flow of the standard at a high level and some of those key requirements by going, for the most part, clause by clause. So the introduction of the standard includes notes, some additional guidance, but it's not necessarily auditable in and of itself. Clause one covers or houses some of the general requirements. For example, the scope. There's a reminder in clause 1.1 that actions performed by outside providers do need to be considered in the scope. This is where we're talking about the RIOS footprint specifically, and this should include activities performed by outside providers, one example of which is a contractor. Clause 1.1.1 houses RIOS outcomes. It outlines the implementation criteria, intended outcomes, and calls for proactivity. And we see, again, this was in the key requirements or high-level summary of the RIOS standard. Proactivity is a consistent theme, the concept that we are going to assess risk before we are encountering it so that we can proactively implement controls or make adjustments rather than react to the incidents or situations that arise from not proactively addressing them. One example of those is management of change, where we are looking at changes before implementing them to assess the potential impact it could have on the management system, on the employees, on the products, on the environmental health and safety risks, the quality risks, to be proactive in their control. And we'll talk more about this as we go through the standard, but you will see the concept of proactivity come up again and again. Clause 1.2 covers the quality, environmental, health, and safety infrastructure. These include a variety of requirements. For example, the requirement to assign responsibilities as required by the standard, as well as a management representative. Senior management ultimately is accountable for the management system. They need to be committed, they need to be involved, and again, are ultimately accountable. This is emphasized in sections 1.2.1 through 1.2.3. The senior management needs to ensure that adequate resources are allotted to ensure the intended outcomes of the quality, environmental, health, and safety management system are met. Clause 1.3 covers the document and record keeping controls. For anyone familiar with ISO 14001:2015, these requirements are fairly similar. It allows for the controlled documents to take many forms, being a modern society and all. Clause 2 focuses on policy requirements. These could be related to evaluation of impacts and risks, annual reviews, senior management commitment, and more, all of which is found in Clause 2. Clause 3 focuses on planning. Here we see proactivity again, where we need to identify the RIOS footprint in Clause 3.1. The idea here is to be proactive in your approach and assess the possibility of risk and impact before or instead of reacting to incidents, as a result of that lack of planning. The assessment is to include purchasing, source material, acquisition, transport, delivery, a whole host of concepts, not just necessarily what takes place within the walls of your organization. It also doesn't have to focus solely on negative impacts. It can also include positive impacts that your organization may have through its processes and controls. This is to be kept up to date, reviewed for changes, and assessed prior to making any changes that could impact the quality, environmental health, and safety management system. So the RIOS footprint is a living document in that way. There are some subclauses to 3.1 that address the quality, environmental, and health and safety concepts respectively. So 3.1.1 covers important quality risks. It requires the organization to identify and control those risks affecting product and or service quality. I have a note here that indicates that risk is the effect of uncertainty and can be positive or negative. Some examples to get you going here might be employee theft, ineffective training, departure of a key employee, equipment or tool breakdown, and so on. Then we've got 3.1.2 that covers environmental impacts, and 3.1.3 that covers health and safety risks. So the same concept repeated for those different elements. 3.1.4 covers legal requirements. This would include any applicable product requirements, and controls do need to be documented according to the RIOS standard for any applicable legal requirements. 3.1.5 houses product, service, and customer requirements. Again, we're looking for documentation of what those requirements are and how they will be monitored. We also need records as evidence of verifying the conformity with those requirements. 3.1.6 focuses on other stakeholder requirements. Again, we're looking for the stakeholders to be identified by the organization, as well as for those respective requirements to be identified by the organization. Who are their stakeholders and what are they expecting them to do? From that list of requirements, then controls are to be implemented accordingly. Those should also be reviewed annually for any changes. And I encourage you to take a look at the stakeholder definition to make sure you're including all relevant groups or individuals. Some examples include owners of the organization, any landlords, sometimes insurance companies have their own requirements. Just a couple quick examples. Improvement planning is covered in 3.2. We see requirements to establish goals, taking into consideration a variety of identified inputs. We also see the need or the requirement to document plans for how the identified tasks will be achieved, any resource needs, who's responsible, when will they be due, and how will the results be evaluated or measured. We touched on change management earlier. This is covered in section 3.3. 3.3 requires a written plan to review the footprint for relevant changes prior to implementing a change to the quality, environmental, health, and safety management system. So again, this is one of many tools to ensure proactivity is implemented or utilized by the organization, rather than making a change and seeing what happens or seeing the impact and plugging those holes once they have sprung leaks. You're proactively assessing the impacts that it could have on your system to already have controls be implemented to hopefully avoid all of those projected outcomes or negative impacts. Clause 4 focuses on implementation. Here, recycler knowledge and competency are covered, as is awareness. So as far as competency goes, the standard requires the identification of competency requirements, as well as records as evidence of the competency requirements being met. You also need evidence of how effectiveness is verified, how you ensure competency or verify competency. training should consider some of these identified criteria, and it also is to be assessed as relevant to the intended outcomes of the quality environmental health and safety management system. And in short, that means some job tasks or employees could potentially have a greater potential for impacting the management system than others. The standard identifies specific topics and requirements for awareness. And section 4.2 for communication also requires a documented communication plan or process. Subclauses under communication cover customer communication, supplier communication, outside supplier communication, and external communication, respectively. So customer communication may include any relevant qualifications, as well as any specific QEHS customer requirements, if there are any. Supplier communication could include source control requirements, expectations for load rejections or identification of errors, and so on. Outside supplier communication would cover contractors. And external communication would be a variety of sources, including visitors, stakeholders, and so on. How the organization communicates any relevant QEHS information with those groups. So some examples might be, how is emergency response protocol communicated to visitors when they come on site? Another example here is any reporting due to the local fire department for on-site chemicals stored. 4.3 covers operational controls. 4.3.1 covers source materials, including controls and requirements relevant to suppliers. 4.3.2 covers outsourced providers, products and services. So here we see criteria that are similar to purchasing controls. What are the documented specifications? What controls are implemented as relative or as related to the potential QEHS impact? Are there records of evaluation and monitoring? And so on. 4.4 covers quality controls. It requires the documentation of specifications and criteria, worker instructions, etc. Environmental and health and safety are covered in 4.5 and 4.6, respectively. So again, trying to avoid those environmental and then health and safety impacts or hazards. So what controls have been identified, and requiring that those controls be documented. 4.7 covers emergency preparedness, keeping in mind the proactivity that we have discussed throughout the presentation and throughout the standard, having an emergency plan or having identified the response expectations and then communicated them effectively according to the requirements in 4.2 to any affected parties. Clause 5 covers checking and corrective action. 5.1 includes monitoring and measurement. Details to be included in the plan are identified within this subclause. 5.1.1 covers activities requiring monitoring and measurement. So there are items detailed within this section that require monitoring, or conversely require the organization to identify those details. 5.1.2 covers quality environmental health and safety compliance. This is where we're talking about applicable legal and other requirements and the organization's compliance to those requirements instead of the requirements within the standard itself. This section requires an annual evaluation of compliance to those legal and other requirements. It also includes verbiage about the competency expectations for the person or people evaluating the organization's compliance. 5.1.3 covers maintenance and calibration of monitoring equipment. This includes requirements such as documentation, documenting the requirements themselves, and taking action to address any out-of-tolerance monitoring devices identified. 5.1.4 covers analysis of monitoring and measurement results. These outputs are required as inputs to the management review, which we will talk about shortly. Section or clause 5.2 houses nonconformance and corrective and preventive action requirements. 5.2.2 specifically covers EHS incident investigations, and it requires investigation of all EHS incidents. And I would draw your attention to the definition of incident, which includes near misses. So a deviation from this requirement would be to not investigate near misses because no one was harmed or damage wasn't done. But if we're truly being proactive, we're really missing that opportunity to have identified that already. And then we're missing another opportunity to learn from the incident, which it is, by assessing how we got here and how it could have been prevented with more robust controls or changes to existing controls to prevent recurrence of that incident, which next time may result in an injury or damage of property. Again, we addressed earlier that the RIOS 2016 standard requires 2 audit cycles worth of previous NCRs to be reviewed for effectiveness, and this would fall under nonconformances in Section 5.2 as well. 5.3 covers the internal audit. Annual audits are required. Full system evaluations are due or required prior to certification or recertification. So the distinction there is that annual audits are required, but they don't necessarily have to be full system evaluations. You could make an argument that full system evaluations are only required prior to that initial certification and the recertification due every 3 years. So maybe you have partial system internal audits on an annual basis those other years, or maybe every year you do a full system audit to get a more robust assessment. Clause 6 covers management review. And when you look at Clause 6 in the standard, there are it identifies inputs and outputs that are required as part of the conforming management review. As promised, I have a brief summary of the certification process on these next couple of slides. So if you're interested in certification to RIOS 2016, the first step would be to obtain a copy of the standard and get familiar with what is being asked of you. You would need to establish documentation to meet the QEHSMS requirements within the RIOS standard for your organization. Conduct any training required to meet the QEHSMS requirements. Implement those requirements, including conducting an internal audit, conducting a compliance evaluation, and conducting a management review, a review of the system, including, as we discussed before, the internal audit as an input to that review. You would also need a contract with a certification body, such as PJR, to conduct your audits. You'll complete a stage 1 and then a stage 2 audit. Address any resulting nonconformities, if there are any, before a certificate can be issued. And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. So the stage 1 and stage 2 audits are distinct and separate. The stage 1 is essentially a document review to ensure the framework of the standard requirements is in place and that the organization is ready for the stage 2 audit. The stage 2 audit, on the other hand, is a full system audit to the requirements of the standard as a whole. It would include sampling of all processes that the organization or within the organization's scope, all shifts. Really, the full assessment takes place at the stage two. Again, any NCRs identified do need to be addressed in full before a certificate can be issued. Once certified, the certificate is good for 3 years and you'll be placed on a surveillance audit cycle for the subsequent 2 years, either annual or semi-annual audits from there, and those would be partial system audits. That third year of the cycle before the certificate expires is called the recertification audit. Again, very similar to a stage two, we're conducting a full system audit in which any NCRs need to be fully resolved before a new certificate could be issued and the cycle would start again. If you haven't already done so, please go ahead and type any questions that you may have into the chat field, and I'll put my contact information up on this last slide here. Again, my name is Austin Matthews. I'm the EHS Program Manager. I can be contacted via email or phone. If you are a prospective client looking for a quote for RIOS 2016 certification and you're not already working with a PJR salesperson, I've included the general phone number to get in touch with sales and get the process going for applying and quoting so you can understand how much audit time would be required and all of that information you may be seeking. Let's see if we have any questions. Okay, I don't see any yet, but I will hang out for another moment in case someone is typing. Otherwise, best of luck during your upcoming audit if you're already scheduled for a RIOS audit. If not, I hope this information is helpful. Feel free to reach out if you do have any other questions about RIOS 2016. We offer our webinars on a recurring basis. You can always take a look at upcoming scheduled webinars on our website and access previously recorded webinars also through our website. So feel free to tune back in to a future webinar for additional information about the RIOS standard or other standards, and feel free to reach out to me directly if you have other questions. Thank you so much. There are no questions, so I'm going to go ahead and log off. Again, you can look for a recording of today's webinar on PJR's website in the next day or so. Thank you for attending today's webinar.